The Flames Talk postgame show starts now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, let's get our Flames Talk postgame show underway on this Sunday evening as the Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Carolina Hurricanes. Flames Talk postgame on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Pat Steinberg. Phone lines are open, 403-240-4444. Text line 960-960. Let's also welcome in Megan Mickelson for a couple minutes as well, color voice of the Flames. And, you know, Mick, they survived and got a point out of this one. I mean, the Dustin Wolf factor was definitely in effect. Carolina unable to score on the power play. Herculean effort on the penalty kill for the Flames. They survived, got a point, and finally scored a goal. So you don't like the result? It wasn't all positive, but definitely at least some things you can build on going into Game 5 of this trip on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, considering how they played in the first period, it wasn't as bad, I don't think, as the first period against the Florida Panthers yesterday. But just, you know, an inability to get anything going in terms of offense and only one shot on goal. So to turn it around and to be able to come away with 1 point with the amount of penalties they took too. I mean, to me, the last couple of games, yes, their penalty kill has been good, but they definitely need to be a lot more disciplined than they have been the last couple games. That would help their cause, that's for sure. And I mean, yeah, a good effort to come back and to come away with a point, but the Carolina Hurricanes just absolutely put on a clinic in that overtime and dominated 3-on-3. You could sort of feel that goal coming before it even went in the back of the net.
Final high dangers, 17-3 at 5-on-5 for Carolina and 21-7. So the Flames, that's why I say they did some good things, but also survived this one, which is why I think you take away the point. Just before we let you skate here, hardest working Flame, which way are you going on that one this evening, Mick?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Dustin Wolf. Yeah, and I mean, you look at the amount of high danger chances, and you have to point out that's two games in a row now that they've given up 21 high danger chances. That is just way too many. You're relying on your goaltenders far too much. But I thought he made some massive saves, especially in that first period. But also, he was their best penalty killer, I thought, in this game. So going to give it to Dustin Wolf.
Dustin Wolf, your hardest working Flame. Megan Mickelson, your hardest working color voice of the Flames. Get out. Here we'll get out of here. We'll talk to you Tuesday. Hey,
thanks, Pat.
Megan Mickelson signing off. Hey, the Flames need all the points they can get. You know, you're at scratch and claw, the scratch and claw mark of the season without question. But look, our marquee matchup on the pregame show brought to you by Country Hills Toyota was the team desperately in need of offense, and they got some, but they obviously didn't get enough. So here's they when Nazem Kadri scored that power play goal right as the 5-on-3 was expiring, it snapped Calgary's goalless drought at 171 minutes and 34 seconds, which narrowly missed a team record. The team record, franchise record goalless drought, 192 minutes and 42 seconds back in November of 2002. So the Flames were about 21 minutes away from setting a new franchise record when it's all said and done. Thankfully, they don't do that, and Kadri does score the goal. But I don't know if they meaningfully generated a ton of offense. Again, they created just 33 shot attempts at 5-on-5, just three slot opportunities at 5-on-5. They definitely got better as the game went along and were a little less on their heels, but the Flames were 35.7%, 46.4%, and 32.3% on 5-on-5 possession in the first, second, and third periods, respectively. They were on their heels all game. Look, Carolina deserved the 2 points, and the Flames, had they got this one and stolen a point, an extra point, it would have been really gutsy, and they would have deserved it. But they still need to find a way to spend more time on the attack, and they need to spend time, and then they need to find a way to generate more quality opportunities. As Mick said postgame after the Florida loss, you can't score goals if you're defending all game. And it's still, look, Carolina's the best possession team in the NHL, and one of the reasons why I continue to think Carolina's going to struggle to ever get over the playoff hump is because they have the puck all game. They are extremely relentless away from the puck. They're, again, as I said, they're the best 5-on-5 team in terms of possession in the NHL, but they struggle, as we saw today, they struggle mightily to score goals. Their power play isn't very good despite some of the talent they have. So, like, this is a pretty punchless team for as much as they have the puck. That said, you still can't be on your heels as much as the Flames were today and expect to generate more than a goal or two. They only got the one, and it came on the power play. That's now three straight games without an even strength goal. And the Flames have never gone three games in a row without scoring a goal. At least that trend continues, and we don't have to talk about three consecutive games without a goal, but goodness gracious. And maybe against Philadelphia, it's a little bit of an easier, I don't want to say easier, but it's a little bit more conducive to the team being able to generate a little bit more. Philadelphia isn't in the same class as Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, or even Washington. They're not. So maybe an opportunity coming up on Tuesday in game five of this road trip to generate a little bit more meaningful offense. And maybe, I don't want to say the floodgates are open because it's not like the Flames have been goalied here, but maybe they're able to generate a little bit more. And maybe that does help them start to move into a better scoring stance as the road trip comes to an end. Two more to go on this road trip. Our marquee matchup brought to you by Country Hills Toyota. It's time to Toyota at the giant Country Hills Toyota. The Toyota truck clear out is on. Get financing as low as 0% OAC with zero down and no payments until July 2025. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Final numbers in this game. Final shots, Carolina doubled up Calgary. Florida also more than doubled Calgary yesterday. Shots were 32-16 Carolina today. Final 5-on-5 possession, Flames were 37.9%, which is not where you want to be, as I mentioned. Final high dangers, 17-3 Carolina at 5-on-5, 21-7 at all strengths. Let's give a huge tip of the hat to Dustin Wolf, who was spectacular. Like, that is now four games on this road trip and five games out of the break where the Flames have gotten spectacular goaltending and game-winning goaltending at worst. You know, they won the game. Wolf was very good against San Jose last Sunday, but the Flames win that game. Didn't have to steal it. Vladar was very good in the winning effort against Washington. Again, didn't need to steal it. Had got a lot of help from his team, but played well. Wolf played well against Tampa Bay, got no run support. Vladar was spectacular yesterday against Florida, got no run support. And Wolf was spectacular today and got the one goal. So one thing you cannot fault on this trip is Calgary's strong goaltending, because it has now been five straight games out of the break, four games on this road trip where the goaltending's been top-notch. Time for the save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. Was indeed Dustin Wolf getting the start, and his save of the game comes in period number three.
Jarvis, Flames captain, wins that one, but Aho steals the puck and centers it around into the doorstep, and now Jarvis, a backhand, Wolf, flat on his face, throws up his leg and makes a game-saving stop.
That ends up being one of the 31 stops made by Dustin Wolf today, and that's his save of the game, brought to you by Shane Holmes. For every save a Flames goaltender makes, Shane Holmes donates $5 to Kidsport Calgary. Visit ShaneHolmes.com, the better way to build. So goaltending has been the number one strength for the Flames on this trip. Penalty killing would be next. I guess resiliency would be next. It has not been a trip that has, look, it's not going to be a break trip, I don't think. I don't think it was ever, when we say make or break, I don't think this trip was ever going to make Calgary's season. It did have the opportunity to break Calgary's season by getting that win in Washington and being 1-2-1 on the trip. I think that there's a pretty good chance they can at the very least come away from this close to 500 when it's all said and done. They're going to have to be much better against Philadelphia, and they need to pick up that 2 points on Tuesday. But the goaltending they're getting is giving them an opportunity. And at the very least, that means that you can give yourself a chance in these final two games before coming back home after Thursday in Dallas. Okay, starting to get some post-game audio. We'll come back here from head coach Ryan Huska and a whole lot more. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444. We've got a few lines open if you want to chat right now. So call now, 403-240-4444. Text line, keep those texts coming in at 960-960. Flames lose this one 2-1 in overtime against the Carolina Hurricanes. This is your Flames Talk post-game show, available wherever you get your podcasts. And this is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Flames Talk post-game show continues on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Flames get the single point and, as a result, move back into a tie for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference with the Vancouver Canucks by virtue of having the tiebreaker. They actually do move into the eighth and final playoff spot in the Western Conference. They've got the tiebreaker by virtue of one more regulation win than Vancouver. The Canucks can't seem to figure it out meaningfully coming out of the Four Nations break themselves. Both teams even games played at 60. Both teams even points at 65. So that's the situation when it comes to the Flames and Canucks in this Western Conference playoff battle as it stands right now. What we don't know, and we probably will have an answer before the end of our post-game show, but as we're talking right now, if you're listening on the podcast, it's after 40 minutes of play in Dallas. Stars lead the Blues 4-3. Blues have won 4 in a row, and they could leapfrog both Calgary and Vancouver into that final playoff spot if they win. Now, that's at 6:15 p.m. Calgary time on this Sunday night, so we'll see a little bit later on when that game comes to an end. So if you're listening live, that's good information. If you're listening on the podcast, it's a little less relevant because of, you're listening well after the fact. Nonetheless, thanks for being with us. Flames Talk postgame after a Flames 2-1 overtime loss to Carolina. Sebastian Aho, the overtime winner at 3:16 of the extra frame. And look, I think the Flames survived. I think they gutted out a point. I think they did a lot of gutsy things, but the same themes remain. They can't generate offense very easily, and it's really reared its ugly head here on this trip. And I think they've got a chance at being a little bit more offensively potent coming up in Tuesday's game against Philadelphia. But, yeah, offense is a challenge. And look, offense is going to continue to be a challenge for this team. I don't think anybody's surprised with them being a low-scoring team. We thought they were going to be a low-scoring team coming into the season. They are one of the NHL's lowest-scoring teams right now and have been all season. Right now, after this game, Flames are now 32nd overall, tied for 32nd, last in the NHL with 2.56 goals per game. Even San Jose is scoring more than the Flames are per game. Anaheim, Calgary tied for the worst teams in the NHL at 2.56 goals per game. Obviously, one goal in three games is going to drop your average. And then at 5-on-5, the Flames don't even, that's three straight games without a 5-on-5 goal for Calgary. At 5-on-5, they are also one of the lowest scoring teams in the NHL. They're 32nd overall in 5-on-5 scoring. So this trip really starting to exacerbate Calgary's scoring woes. And I think this is going to be a challenge for them the rest of the year. Tonight was game 60. So there's 22 games to go. And I don't think at any point scoring is going to become easy for this group. They are a low scoring team. They're going to continue to be a low-scoring team. They're going to have to do a little bit more than they've done in the last three games, and this can't be something that we get used to. But in saying that, I think that we do know that this is going to be an issue for them. Important that they scored a power play goal, and important that Nazem Kadri tied the game. As I mentioned a little earlier, Calgary's shutout streak snapped at 171-34, which was about 21 minutes off the franchise record. Calgary's longest drought of not scoring a goal happened in early November of 2002 when they went 192 minutes and 42 seconds over the span of four games without a goal. They scored in the third period of one game, lost a 1-0 overtime game, then got shut out again, and finally scored in the third period of their next game to make it 192-42. So Flames weren't that far off. Now, they wouldn't have been able to set a new record in this game, But they weren't far off when it's all said and done. That's how anemic it's been. That being said, huge. We already talked about the goaltending. That penalty killing effort, 6 for 6 on the penalty kill this afternoon, was absolutely incredible, including that penalty kill that could have won the game in overtime, rather in regulation for Carolina. In the final 5 minutes, they had a 4-minute double minor power play thanks to Blake Coleman high stick. Now, Carolina, if we're doing Carolina's post-game show, we're talking about how anemic they are and how with 21 high-danger chances, they only scored twice. But we're not doing Carolina's post-game show. We're doing Calgary's. And boy, that outside of the goaltending, best part of this game for the Flames was their PK. It was great all afternoon long. And obviously was at its most important in that stretch late in the third period, which allowed them to get the point and was their best penalty kill of the game. But their two PKs in the first were great. I thought they were great in the second, and they killed off three more, including that 4-minute one in the third period. So huge, huge tip of the hat to the penalty killing effort. They don't get that single point without a penalty killing effort like that. So good on them. And, you know, maybe don't take as many penalties going forward. That would be also advisable. You don't want to take 6 even against the Hurricanes, who have a very poor power play. But also good to see Joel Farabee finish the game. He blocked a shot with his hand in the second period, but did return and finish. And incredible to see Kevin Ball back in this game. Right at the end of that aforementioned 4-minute power play for Carolina, he took a Jacob Slavin shot off the back of the head. We all believe that Ball was out with a concussion very recently and had to miss 8 games as a result. And to see him take a hard shot off the back of his head was quite scary. He left, went right down the tunnel, and then there he was back on the bench, and that was awesome to see. So very, very promising. Look, that's a fluke play. You don't see a puck go off the back of a guy's head very often, but it sure was awesome to see that Ball was okay and was able to return to the bench. Okay, Flames talk post game underway. Call now 403-240-4444. Text now 960-960. It's time to go from the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. Let's start with head coach Ryan Huska from Lenovo Center in Carolina following a 2-1 overtime loss to the Hurricanes.
First period aside, what did you see in terms of a fight from your group here?
We weren't really moving our feet, and the execution wasn't there in the first, but I thought we got much better in the second period. We started to generate a lot more pace with our game, and we got some chances. For me, it's finding a way to stick with it, and I thought the guys did tonight, and the penalty kill at the end of the game was probably the tell for me that we're going to come out of it. You go through these stretches during the season when you get into ruts. We're in one offensively right now, but it will turn as long as the work and the compete is still there, and I saw that right until the end today.
And the sacrifice on that kill, just throwing anything in front of pucks.
That might have been our best night on the penalty kill this year, so it's nice that the guys did what they had to do. I thought their sticks were good. They blocked a lot of shots, and then Wolfie was good in there as well.
Given the way you started, it almost feel like you were fortunate to get 1 point?
I don't know. I mean, this is they're a good team, and they're a fast team. And I think for us, you have to execute with the puck in order for our pace to get to where it needs to be. So sometimes you have to rely on your goaltender. We most definitely did that in the first period. He allowed us to get the legs underneath us and get better as the game kind of went on and kind of find the emotion in it. And he's part of our team too. And you need that from him from time to time when your team isn't having the easiest go scoring goals. Mm-hmm. He gave it to us tonight with a really good effort.
Can you understate the significance of just finding one on that power play?
Well, scoring a goal, you mean?
Yeah.
Like I said, it's going to come. You do go through stretches, and unfortunately we're in one right now, but we found a way to get a point in a difficult building, and that's something for us to build on as we go into Philadelphia now.
Kevin Ball's okay?
Yep. From what I understand, he's fine. It was more of a pressure cut thing off the back of the helmet, thankfully.
Could help but notice the big ovation he got on the bench too as he returned.
Hey, it's block shots like that. The guys appreciate it. So it's things like that. The fight from Joel Hanley. Didn't go looking for it, but I think he finished it. So I think he did a really good job in that area too. So it's coming is, I guess, my message to the team.
The guys said they were joking in the period about ninth period is the charm for scoring a goal. What does that say about your group that they can joke about it?
Hey, like I said, it happens. I mean, you don't like it to happen. You get some stretches where you go cold for whatever reason. But scoring a goal on the power play was a big one for us, and it's something for us to build on now. Yep. Okay, thank you, guys.
There you go. That is head coach Ryan Huska from Carolina. Good to hear Kevin Ball is fine. A little bit of an update on top of the fact that he returned to the bench. So sounded like he was going to be fine, looked like he was going to be fine, and confirmed by the head coach that he is indeed fine. So there's head coach Ryan Huska, the goal scorer today. And honestly, you know, this is who Nazem Kadri is. Nazem Kadri scores big goals. Nazem Kadri scores big times. Nazem Kadri steps up when he needs to. Nazem also runs hot. He has been, read his book, this has been a player driven by his emotions and desire and high competitive level his entire career. And yeah, he thought there should have been a penalty called on the late second period goal that Carolina scored. And he thought that that goal shouldn't have counted as a result. He took it unsportsmanlike for being a little too hot at the officials. I don't know if he said something or they just didn't like being berated, whatever. Took an unsportsmanlike conduct call that could have led to a 2-0 goal. This is what I said after 40 minutes of play. This is what I said that game against Winnipeg where he was really hot and took that unsportsmanlike call in the Winnipeg loss against the Flames at the Dome. Nazem Kadri is a Stanley Cup winner, is a guy who's going to play 1,000 NHL games, is one of the most important players on the Flames. He is all these things because of how his emotions run hot, because of how he wears his heart on his sleeve, because of how high his compete level is. And every once in a while, if that means that you take an unsportsmanlike, me personally, I'm not going to criticize it because that guy sets the tone. That guy's an emotional leader. That guy is a leader, period, on this team. So you take the unsportsmanlikes. For me anyway, you take that every once in a while with as kind of the other edge of the sword with how important he is and with all the good things those emotions bring to the game. Let's hear from Naz, his thoughts post-game after a 2-1 overtime loss in Carolina.
I think that sums it up. We fought right to the end. Credit to them. They're a team that, has a lot of shot blocks. They do a good job. Sticks are always in lanes. I mean, defensively, I think, obviously that's why our shot volume wasn't there in the first period. They, had a lot of blocked opportunities, but, I'm glad that we fought right to the end. That's a, we'd like to get two, but that's a huge point for us.
What did you see on the first goal?
Their first goal.
Yeah.
Well, I got tripped.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just tried to spin off my guy, and I felt like I had him. And the initial contact I felt was on my legs, and it took me right out of the play. And fortunately, makes you a little more pissed off that they go down the ice and score. Mm-hmm. But I felt like it should have been a trip.
This effort, from where you guys started the game to where it ended, I guess there's a lot of pride in this room to get at least a point.
Sure. We're not satisfied with that. No. We would have liked to get two. We felt like we, especially after the first period, we had some great opportunities to, some high danger chances to maybe take the lead. But like I said, made some big saves, some big blocks. Unfortunate to lose an OT, but, it's a tough building to come into and get points, and we got one tonight.
You're a veteran. You've been through this stuff before, but to go 9 periods without a goal, how frustrating is that for you?
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks. I mean, any guy that wants to score goals, it's not great. But, I've seen this happen a million times, that there's certain stretches in the season where, for whatever reason, you get a little bit cold or you get hot. It works both ends of the spectrum. So, right now we got to work a little harder to get goals, but, they'll come and they'll come in bunches.
What do you make of that sequence with, whatever it is, final 4 minutes? They got a 4-minute power play, obviously, and just seemed like desperation all around, just trying to get sticks and lanes and bodies in front of pucks.
Yeah, crazy ending for sure. I didn't realize at first it was a double minor. I didn't realize he was bleeding, but, our PK was great tonight. Special teams, I felt like, was great and certainly helped in getting us that point.
And Wolf, I guess he played a pretty big role in this, too.
He did. Made some big saves. Wolf, he's been, consistent all year. So that's, he expects that out of himself, and I love that he's not satisfied with just being okay. He wants to be great, and he wants to be a game changer, and, he certainly gives us an opportunity to win.
There you go. That is Nazem Kadri post-game as well, and that's our look inside the Flames dressing room, brought to you by Canyon Plumbing and Heating. Replace your furnace with upgrades like state-of-the-art Wi-Fi thermostats and indoor air quality solutions. Financing options available. For more info, visit canyonplumbing.com. Final score from Carolina. Flames lose it 2-1 in overtime, but they do get the single point. They're now 1-2-1 on this road trip so far, so they've got 3 of a possible 8 points on this road trip. 2 more to go starting Tuesday in Philadelphia. Let's get to the text line at 960-960 following this one in Carolina. Starting with our buddy Scott in Victoria. Scott, he says, I mean, at least they scored one goal, right? Being shut out for 8 periods is wild, though. I'm not sure what to say at this point. No point in making the playoffs if they can't score. It looks like a sweep waiting to happen. Let's hope they can find some scoring in Philadelphia. This reads, over the shoulder, Wolf, what else is new? Geez, if you're pointing at Dustin Wolf and making that a negative in this game, I don't know what the hell you were watching. Dustin Wolf should have been one of the 3 stars named in Carolina, but whatever. 3 stars are what they are. They are, they mean, they're one person or a group of people's opinion. That's why whenever somebody gets mad at me for my 3-star picks at the Dome, I'm like, it's just my opinion. Like, let's settle the hell down. But he should have been one. He was the best player for Calgary today, bar none, no question. He made 31 on 32, and a lot of those, as we've talked about, the high dangers for Carolina were through the roof. 17-3 at 5-on-5, 21-7 overall. Yeah, Dustin Wolf was their best player, so I don't know what somebody's talking about when they're pointing at Dustin Wolf and making that a negative, whether he got beat over the shoulder in overtime or what. Also, Rasmus Anderson, I think, was at like 2.5 minutes on his shift in overtime. So, anyway, long story short, this game, not on Wolf. This from Dave. Flames mixed it up. Rather than go hard the first period and peter out in the third, today they sucked wind in the first, especially in shots on goal. Played hard and well in the second and third periods. Went hard in overtime, but got outplayed. Both goaltenders stood on their heads with great saves. My stars are Wolf, Kochetkov, and Aho. Well-earned point. Good game, Flames. Leland in McKenzie says, Pat, do you think with the offensive struggles the last couple games, Flames will make a move before the deadline? I mean, again, much like we've said, if they can find somebody that fits their age range, if they can find somebody that is going to be here more than just a few months or a year in a few months, then yeah, maybe. If they can find a 24-year-old who can come in, 23, 22-year-old who can come in and meaningfully help with offense, then yeah, I think they're going to do that. Otherwise, I don't think they're going to be going and giving up a lot of future capital just to try to help the goal scoring this year. That doesn't fit their blueprint. If it's age appropriate and can help now, then I think that they'll make a move. Just very unlikely those moves or those types of deals will be there before Friday. But if they are, then Craig Conroy's shown he's ready to make a deal. But are they going to go get a rental 29-year-old who sure might be able to help a little bit on offense and give up a couple picks and lose him in free agency in the summertime? No, I don't think they're going to do that. I really don't. And I mean, Craig Conroy's been pretty transparent on them not doing that, regardless of how difficult it's been for them to score here of late. And also, this is not a team that's a player away from being a high-scoring team. They are tied for 31st, but they are last in the NHL in goals per game. They are 32nd of 32 in 5-on-5 goals per game. That's not changing with one player. And I think that's a really important thing to point out as well. This reads, Pat, I thought Hanley played a whale of a game. Great defensive plays, had a fight, blocked a few shots. I think Hanley's extremely underrated as to how important he is on this Flames blue line. I mean, without Hanley, I don't know where they are on the blue line this year with his ability to step in and play minutes that he's never really played before in his NHL career. good on them. It's been a huge, huge boost for them this year. Chris in Copperfield said, I've said it all year. As long as the effort's there, let the chips fall where they may. Wolf for Calder. That was a Calder Trophy-like performance from Dustin Wolf today. Duncan writes, the OT winner was completely on Rass. His competitiveness borders on selfish too often. He should have gotten off a minute before, but instead gave Aho the open lane and hung Wolf out to dry. I don't know, Dunks. 3-on-3 with the long change is a different beast. If he does that and Carolina scores, then we're ripping Anderson there. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to make a line change 3-on-3 in overtime. So, did the overtime goal happen largely in part because Frost and Anderson were dog tired? Yes, absolutely. But that's not laziness. That's not lack of competitiveness. That's not selfishness. That's just, it's hard to make changes 3-on-3. This reads from Claude, Pat, entertaining game. And that's my biggest takeaway. Having said that, they're offensively anemic on this trip. I love the PK and their fight. Goaltending's been elite all weekend. Hope Farabee and Ball aren't too banged up. Ash says, very bold move to scratch Sharon Govich today. I hope it doesn't matter, doesn't shatter his already fragile confidence. I'm curious to know if you have any insights on why Pahal was scratched. Also, do you think Coronado now needs to be reunited with Backlund and Coleman to at least have one historically reliable offensive line going forward? Personally, I'd keep Coronado on the Huberdeau Kadri line myself. As for scratching Sharon Govich, yeah, you do run that risk of hurting an already very fragile confidence right now. But at the same time, you're sending a message to the entire team that what's been done hasn't been good enough. And Sharon Govich has been a real disappointing player this year. Let's not mince words there. He has not been good enough and has not been an offensive consistent driver on this team. And he just signed a contract where he's supposed to be. So I didn't mind scratching Sharon Govich as a message. On the Pahal front, I think that was more, hey, this is a message. We weren't good enough against Florida. We haven't been good enough the last two games. We're making a wholesale change on the blue line on the third pair. I think the Pahal one was less performance related and more message related myself. But that's just my guess. This reads, this game just only exemplifies that this team has the goaltending they need, but it's the rest, no real elite talent with maybe Coronado and said goaltending that can change a game with not much brewing in the farm system other than a couple of hopefuls. The next couple of years of drafting those acquired assets and not overpaying for high-end free agents until they have some solidified elite players, then the free agent market will be a whole lot easier to draw. I've absolutely loved this edition of the Flames, and they're tied for a playoff spot this late in the season. I had them pegged for 12th in the West, but there's still a lot of games to play. We'll still be cheering hard until the end, no matter where they end up. This from Jeff in Vancouver. Go Flames, go. The Canucks are brutal. You guys got this. Corey writes, I think it's pretty apparent this team is going to have a really hard time until they get some serious scoring talent. Everyone in the top five should be on the secondary scoring list. Obviously frustrating that so many guys aren't even close to what they did last year. Jeff writes, as much as I love being a fan of the Flames, I'm getting tired of this goal-scoring deficiency. Come on, Craig, time to get us a rental if the playoffs is the goal, please. Jeff, I cannot disagree more about going and getting a rental just to solve something for this year. I disagree vehemently. I would hate to see them do that. I don't think that fits their age, their blueprint, rather. Again, if it's a 23-year-old, 24-year-old, if it's something similar to the deal that they made with Philadelphia, different story. But go get a rental just to help the 32nd-ranked team? What's a rental going to do on this team? Make them get to 30 or 29? It just makes no sense to me. That's my opinion. I'm not saying you're wrong, Jeff. I couldn't disagree more when it comes to them going out and getting a rental just to try to solve their scoring woes for this season only. Mike writes, Nazem Kadri is one of the most important players on the Flames this year. Emotional, absolutely, but he's a leader on this team and they need him. I agree completely, Mike. This from Rory in the Beltline. Unbelievable performance by Wolf tonight. Tough go without any run support. They just don't have the horses to keep up with the premier teams. If the guys end up losing to both Philly and Dallas, do you think Conroy stands pat or still decides to bring in some additional depth at the deadline, like a left shot D or right shot fourth line center. That might hold him short if they lose them both and are a little out of it, but I still think that he might look at something tinkering around the edges. This from John says, dead on with Kadri, Pat. I actually think he's kept his emotions in check very well this year. P.S. Hi, Kim. Hello, Kim. And yeah, I think Kadri has done a very good job of using his emotions almost always positively. And sometimes it happens on the other side where it, you know, runs a little too hot. But I think you'll take the occasional other end of the sword when it comes to Kadri and how his emotions help him, help this team, and set the tone night in and night out. Okay, text line remains open at 960-960. Keep them coming. We'd love to hear from you on this Sunday evening. And now the phone lines, which are open at 403-240-4444. I've got a couple of lines open if you want to chat on this Sunday night. Call now, 403-240-4444. This is Flames Talk Postgame on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Flames lose at 2-1 in overtime against the Hurricanes. Let's welcome Pepper to the program. Pepper, you're kicking it off today. What's going on?
Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
Your show, as always, is excellent. You're good at what you do, man.
I try my best, Flames, anyway.
Yeah, you do well. The Flames,
thank you,
I have to say, a good effort over the on the road. I mean, not the result that we want, and of course the scoring isn't there. But I think the head coach, Huska, that's going to turn around a little bit. I mean, it's not going to be perfect by any means. I'd like to suggest some things, if I may.
Sure.
I'm a fan of the game. The game first, then choose a favorite NHL team. In my case, Calgary. Listen, like season tickets from the ranch here to the old Corral back when the Atlanta Flames became Calgary.
Right.
Trades. I'm a proponent of not trading unless absolutely necessary at the deadline. Get the business, get the work done before the trade line. Example, the Winnipeg Jets. Now, why would anybody there want to touch the chemistry there? Like, why would anybody want to do that? That's just an example. That's my opinion. There are situations, of course, that to get things done. However, like in Edmonton, I think they're probably maybe trying to move Evander Kane, likely, I would think.
Sounds like it, yep.
Florida is wise to acquire Seth Jones, but generally, like I'm kind of a proponent of not trading. I mean, there's so much emphasis put on the trade deadline, and like I'm all about chemistry, but generally, I think trades are you know, get the work done before the trade deadline,
which I think is fair.
Most importantly, for me at least, do not, under any circumstance, lose Dan Vladar. And I've stuck by that long before. I think you remember me calling him before about his outstanding performance the other night. Are you kidding me? Like, why would they break up that tandem under any circumstance? Again, that's just my opinion. But it would blow my mind if they did anything of that nature. Something else I noticed watching a game in Chicago. I don't know if it was Calgary, but I was watching a game come out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And you know those changing advertising, electronic advertising signs behind the nets?
Yeah.
Something to the effect of number one pick for failing or something to that effect. And so I say again, I said this before, that I'd be a proponent of, I wish the NHL would just needs to look at the notion of a consolation tournament of playoffs. So the number one pick to the winner of the consolation playoffs, the second pick to the runner-up of the consolation playoffs, and so on. Anyway, there you go. I've offered a few suggestions. I love your show. Thank you for what you do.
Thanks, Pepper. You be well. I appreciate the call. First of all, the 3 points that you touched on. Number one, I do think there is a lot of times a lot of wisdom to making deals before the deadline. And the main reason is it gives whatever player a team is acquiring some time to acclimate to a new team, because there's always going to be a little bit of, like even what we're seeing from Frost and Farabee. And by doing that deal at the end of January instead of early March, it gives Frost and Farabee, like, I don't know, when it's all said and done, it'll be like 13 games, something like that, in terms of trying to get 13 games more than they'd have than if they made that deal at the deadline. So I think there's a lot of wisdom there. And I think that lots of GMs do try to get out in front of it. Why sometimes it all happens at the deadline? Well, deadlines still spur on decisions, right? And sometimes guys become available that you weren't expecting, or bids to re-sign a player go right to the deadline, and then they don't happen. So that team makes the hard decision to move on from said player. So that's why deadline day is still somewhat of a busy day in this league, but more and more teams are doing their business before the deadline. In terms of Ladar, especially the way he's played on this trip, I have no problem with the Flames not trading him. In fact, I don't think dealing him is the way to go at this stage. I'm not suggesting they should re-sign him in the summertime, because I don't at this point believe that's the way to go. But in terms of trading him, I would be sticking with this same tandem, Wolf-Vladar, for the rest of the season and see how Cooley plays down the stretch in the American League. I think regardless, and Cooley's game has dropped a little bit, but regardless, Devin getting all those games in the American League and playing a number one workload for the first time in his career for a full season, I think will only do him good in terms of development. And then you can make a call in terms of whether you want to give him a shot to be Dustin Wolf's backup next year, or if you want to go back to Vladar or whatever the heck you want to do. But I think for the rest of this season, Cooley remaining in the American League makes a ton of sense for his development, and thus keeping Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf together as a pairing also makes a ton of sense. So we'll see what the Flames end up doing in that regard. As for the consolation tournament, I just don't think that's ever going to happen in this league. It's just not something that they play. It's such a physically taxing season to begin with, and then to ask them to play games just for draft positioning, which the average player doesn't really care about. I mean, it's a fun idea. I just don't think it's ever going to be put into practice. Okay, let's continue along on the phone lines at 403-240-4444. Our buddy Travis is up next. What's up, Trav?
Hey, Patty. How's it going, bud?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good. I haven't got to call in as much this year, because just with the times go in the morning, but I've been
hurts
listening
my feelings,
a lot.
Hurts my feelings, but, you know.
Yeah, I'll try to call in a bunch here down the stretch if I can. But I've been listening. I definitely listening to the shows pretty much all the time. So, you know, watching the Flames, it's been a good season for them overall, considering whatever everyone's expecting out of them. But more than ever, I say it's very important to stick to the plan. Just kind of watching them, can they sneak in? Sure. Could they win a round? Maybe. But realistically, they're not going to win a cup with this team. Mm-hmm. So I think to be giving up any assets for any kind of rental, like the guy said on the text line, is definitely a no-no. And I think we always underestimate. I know Brad Tree Living always, when he ran the team, he'd flip off like a third-round pick for this defenseman, or, you know, always trading picks away, but you can get some pretty good players with second and third and fourth round picks at times, right? So, you know, I think it's about accumulating as many assets as you can still. And they're kind of like throwing a dart at a dartboard, right? Like, there's some late round gems you can get. I forget if Fox was a second or third round pick.
Fox was a third round pick.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, yeah, we could.
I mean, just think about it. I mean, just if you think about back in the last like 15, 20 years with the Flames, you got Johnny, who was a fourth round pick. TJ Brody was not a first round pick. Rasmus Anderson, Oliver Shillington, Andrew Mangiapane. Like all these guys, Martin Pospisil. Like lots of guys that are on this roster that have played on this team that weren't first round picks and have turned into pretty useful players. So yeah, it's you're right, and I mean that's why people are so excited about this most recent draft, Trav, because, you know, the Flames had 10 picks. They had 9, then they turned it into 10 picks at the 2024 draft. They got 10 new players, and they brought in a lot of skill. I mean, look at the numbers Battaglia is putting up. Look at the numbers Henry Muse is putting up. Obviously, Parek, Matvei Gridin, Eric Jameson. Just you go down the line. Andrew Bascha would be putting up huge points if he didn't have the injury situation that he's got. So, I mean, the Flames have done a nice job with their picks and have brought some really promising players into the organization. Not all of them are going to hit, but to your point, you know, you give yourself the opportunity when you accumulate a bunch of assets. And I can tell you, Trav, that that's exactly how Conroy's looking at it. He's not going to be sacrificing the long term just to go chase this season. He's been very public about that. He said that publicly many times, and he said it behind closed doors to me even more times. He's not going to be going to chase fleeting success this year at the expense of the long-term plan. So you really can rest easy in that regard.
Yeah, no, it just makes no sense. Just stick to the plan. I think, you know, we definitely have some people that are interesting prospects that hopefully a couple of them can hit. Obviously, Parek, I seen today, back-to-back 30-goal seasons never happened in the OHL. So,
right? Like this, you know, I didn't even mention Parek because he was their first pick, but then you add in Parek to that haul at the draft, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so that's why, I think, if you could add a defenseman, say, like a Ball or something, and that's what you're adding to your group, still pretty young with some upside, then, you know, something like that could make sense just because it's someone you're going to build with. But besides that, for a rental defenseman, I don't think anything makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to give away a sixth round pick to bring in somebody, different story for me. But yeah, top 40, top 60, top 80 picks. It doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
No, it doesn't. What a surprise Wolf's been this season, Pat? Like, I know kind of last year at the end of the year, we're kind of chatting and it's like, what do you think are realistic games played for Wolf would be, and you kind of thought if it's half and half, or even if he played 30, 35 games, that'd be a pretty good season for him. But he's exceeded everything we could have expected at the end of last season.
Oh, yeah. And I thought he was going to be good. I thought, you know, just my opinion at the end of last year was Wolf's proven he can play in the league, and he fully was deserving of the opportunity to be a full-time NHLer. But yeah, he's exceeded expectations by a significant margin. It's been an outstanding story this year.
Yeah, no, it's so nice to see. And, you know, even Huberto, he's kind of been the whipping boy since he got here. And obviously he's not putting up 115 points, but I think he's had a pretty solid season for what it is, right? He's never going to live up to the contract, but he's played hard. He's been one of our top players, obviously, like he needs to be on a low scoring team. So, you know, a lot of props to him too on a bounce back season for him.
He says that this is the best version of him that he's ever that he's ever had. Like in terms of his defensive all round game, he believes this is the best version of him in the NHL, and that includes his 115 point season. So this is by far his best year as a member of the Flames. And no, is it ever going to be a situation where that $10.5 million contract is you know, going to feel like it's lived up to? Maybe not. Probably not. But he still has been a pretty important player for them this year.
For sure. What else was I going to say there?
I don't know, Trav.
I had something else on the top of my head. Now it's kind of went by the wayside. But, I guess just in general, is there a prospect in the minors that you think will surprise us and be a solid NHLer? Obviously, we know the draft from this year, but who would you be most excited about besides, say, Muse and Parek? Who would be the next guy?
Are we talking about just the minors, or are we talking in the system period?
In the system period, really, yeah.
The guy, you know, the guy for me all day is Luke Misa. I think that there is a really interesting player in there. And I think that His ability to play center. I don't think that we're talking about him being a number one center or anything like that, but I do think that there's a pretty good player in there. So Luke Misa comes to mind. Henry Muse definitely comes to mind. You know, Eric Jameson's having a pretty quietly good year. I'm not sleeping on Etienne Morin. And don't forget about Sam Hanzek. Sam Hanzek's still in this system and is playing his first year of professional hockey. It hasn't been perfect. He made the team out of camp, but then the team decided to send him back to the American League and let him learn there. And I think that was the right call. But there's just a few off the top of my head. Azam, our producer, says Axel Hertig, and he's having himself a pretty nice year with the Calgary Hitmen. So I mean, there's some I will say under Conroy, they've done a pretty good job of drafting here.
Yeah, no, they've done a good job. I mean, you know, I think just last year, a lot of excitement. I think we still got a few picks in the next couple of years in the first rounds, too. Even though they're late round picks, you're not obviously usually going to get a stud there, but you could get solid NHL players that play for your franchise for a long time still.
Yeah, 100%.
One last one, I'll let you go. But I think the coaching staff, too, I know people are always going online and the fan base is bipolar. Some love things, some hate things, and it's a personal opinion, I guess. But Ryan Huska, I think, has done a pretty good job all year with his team. He's been a pretty good foundational, like pretty solid in his approach and everything he does with the team. And I think he deserves a lot of credit along with the coaches he brought in to help him, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know that they're not the world's most offensively gifted group, and I... That's kind of an understatement, knowing that we're talking about the 32nd ranked offensive team in the NHL right now. But I mean, knowing this roster, knowing who's been traded away over the last number of years, or I guess in the last year, really, knowing that they didn't really bring in huge names to try to help fill those gaps this summer. I think, you know, Huska's got him playing a brand of hockey that is not always the sexiest. It obviously is not conducive to a lot of offense, but it is the brand that is going to give them an opportunity to win more games than they lose, which they have done this season. So I've liked what Huska's done. I'm a big Ryan Huska guy, and I think that he's coached a pretty good year. Not everything's perfect, and there's always room for criticism on a NHL coach, of course, but I think by and large he's done a good job, and I know that not everybody agrees, but that's where I am on it.
Yeah, no, that's what I think too. I don't see why people can hate on him. People are picking the Flames to finish in the bottom five, and they're right in it for a playoff spot. And with $17 million or $18 million in cap space. So, you know, imagine if they use that cap space and had a couple more goal scores, it'd be probably a whole different scenario. So I think he's done a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
But thanks, Patrick. Talk to you soon, my friend.
Good to hear from you, Trav. Don't be a stranger, hey?
Yeah, and I'll call in a few more times here down the stretch for sure.
Okay, good to hear. Have a good day, buddy.
Thanks. You too, thank you.
403-240-4444 is your phone number following the Flames 2-1 overtime loss to Carolina in Raleigh. Let's say hello to Randy on the phone lines. What's up, Randy?
Hey, Pat Steinberg. It's Randy Lennon here from Guadalajara.
Oh,
and
in Jalisco.
Yeah, exactly. And I know we've clashed a couple of times, I think, on the text line a while back. I listen to you guys all the time. I'm actually not in Guadalajara. I'm on a trip. Just came down off Camelback Mountain in Scottsdale here.
Okay.
Sitting as the sun goes down, I'm sitting on my motorcycle ready to head out to where I'm staying. One of the things I've been really wanting to talk about, and I've jumped on a couple other shows, like on the NHL, Mick Hearn, for example.
Yep.
I don't know why... especially Flames fans that have been around for a while would think that, you know, this team right now, this team has a reasonable shot to get in. And then, but people said, but of course they're never going to win Stanley Cup and they're going to get knocked out in the first round and so on and so forth. Well, hang on a minute. Maybe not, because there's one thing they have in common with that 03-04 team that went all the way to one goal. And, you know, they, with a little bit of luck, they could have won in game six and should have won in game six. What do they have in common? Do you know what it is, Pat?
Well, there's a few things. What is it for you?
They play playoff hockey all year long.
Yeah, I think that's very fair.
So, you know, I mean, totally different type of coach. So the things that they have in common is, one, they work, they're nine times out of ten the hardest working team on the ice, okay, which the Flames under Sutter were for sure. Number two, it's a playoff brand of hockey. Of course, number three, you know, if Wolf keeps going, you know, he's a Mika Kiprusoff story. Like, Kiprusoff came out. I mean, Kiprusoff's the reason they got to the game seven.
Of course.
So, I mean, it looks like they've got a goaltender that could steal games in the playoffs. And when you're the eighth seed, like LA was a few years ago and won the cup, all the pressure's on the other team. Like, also in 03-04, they were the lower seeded team in all four series.
Yes.
And if you start stealing a game 1-0, the pressure mounts on the opponent. And the other thing that they have in common, that, which I think a lot of people are starting to notice, I mean, even the odds makers are talking about picking Calgary over Vancouver because of the room, you know, because of the, you know, the intangibles. I like to call it love. Like, these guys seem to just love each other. And they're also, you know, it's us against the world. Man, oh, man, you get into the playoffs and you somehow knock off that number one seed. In the case of 03-04, they were the sixth seed, but they knocked off a pretty damn good Vancouver team.
Did they ever?
Heavily favored.
Yeah.
Right? And then they knocked off, well, they knocked off all the division champions, right?
Well, that Detroit team, it's funny, you talk about the... you talk about like what happens when you start winning 1-0 games and stuff like that. That's kind of what that Detroit series was. Like, they got the Red Wings all turned around because, you know, this Red Wings team had been the, you know, had all those Hall of Famers on it, and they couldn't score on Kiprusoff, and it turned into a scenario where I think that without question the Red Wings got up in their head and they weren't able to win more than two games in that series. And Kiprusoff was transcendent in that series. Like, that game six where they won, they won it 1-0. There were a couple of other absolutely, like, just highway robbery outings from Kiprusoff against Detroit. But, yeah, I mean, and the thing that I would say on the whole front of, you know, it being similar to 04, I always stop short of comparing anything to that year because of how magical it was, right? And how lightning in a bottle, once in a lifetime, that whole thing was. But I do think the whole idea, especially for a team that has a bigger picture in mind here, I do think the whole idea of just get in and see what happens. This year, I'm okay with them having that mentality because that's not the only thing that they're thinking about here. So, and there's more to this plan than just this year. So, yeah, I'm if they make it in, I'll be really interested to see who they get. They'll probably get Winnipeg, and I'm you know, they've played Winnipeg pretty tough this year, so I'd be super interested to see how that plays out.
Well, you could get Winnipeg totally gripping their sticks with what's happened to them in the last, what, two or three playoff years?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, all the pressure is on the higher-seeded team, especially if it's, you know, if it works out to 1-8 or, you know, whatever it looks like. So that's a similarity. Now, so you've got $15 million of cap space, and you're saying don't go get a rental. Well, I kind of wonder, like, if it looks like you can get in, what's the downside of just bringing in a rental? As long as you don't have to give up one of your real core, you know, young guys. Like, however, when you look at the system right now, like, the Flames have all kinds of guys. You haven't even mentioned, I've forgotten his name, the guy that came up that's 26 years old that started playing and looking great. The shootout specialist. What's his name?
Oh, Justin Kirkland.
Yeah, Kirkland's going to be back. And then you mention all those guys in the Wranglers, and then you mention guys that are playing junior. I mean, we got a ton of talent on the way, but really think about it. What's the harm in bringing in, going after a true scorer or a couple of scorers? Other than the other side of that coin, and I would be torn if I was Craig. When you have a team that there's this much love in the dressing room, you actually don't want to tinker with it at the deadline. Especially when you got a lot of, like, you got Klapka there, for example. You know, this guy, if he ever got a chance, you got a lot of guys that could be big playoff performers.
I think, and Randy, we gotta wrap up after this part, but I think the downside would be that it would be against the plan. And Craig Conroy has a blueprint in place, and for him to go and make those types of moves would be kind of deviating from the plan. And I really think he wants to, as much as humanly possible, stay true to the plan he's put in place. That would be my best answer to it. We got to wrap up just because we got to get some other callers in. But I appreciate the call. I appreciate the kind words, Randy. Keep listening and be safe on the drive. Hey.
Oh yeah, always am. Thanks, Pat. Great job, and great year to be a Flames fan from my perspective.
It's been fun. It's been fun. Be well, Randy. Thanks for the call.
Okay, keep smiling.
Thanks, Matt. I will. 403-240-4444. That's your phone number following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss to Carolina. Phone lines are open if you want to chat this afternoon. Let's say hello to Tony. What's going on, Tony?
Hey, Pat. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Not too bad. Well, the last three games, man, they're lucky they even got one goal. They shouldn't have won today. They didn't win today, but it just shows, like, we're hoping this team, everybody's hoping this, that they're going to make the playoffs. I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs. And like I said, we're going to be out of the top 10. You get any of these players, like, I think this year's draft is quite important for the Flames. You draft these guys, it's going to take 2 or 3 years for these guys to actually be NHL players. Look at Coronado. Well, when he was drafted, 3 years ago? 2 years ago?
Coronado was 4 years ago, 2021.
Okay, and he's coming into his own this year.
Yes.
So that's like everybody's saying, well, when the new building comes around, in 2 or 3 years, that's when you want to maybe be, you know, trying to get into playoffs, trying to be a contender. But the way they're going, like middle of the road, like we've always said, it's just not going to do it. You're not going to get a top-end player from another team. Teams aren't stupid out there. They're not going to give one of their top-end players for nothing.
Yeah, and I don't know who's suggesting that they would do it for nothing.
I mean, okay, I'm not saying for nothing, but I mean, how are you going to get a top? They won't even give them up. They're hard to get.
Yes, agreed. And that's why going and finding a number one center via trades is very, very rare, or via free agency is very, very rare.
Like, I'm telling you, like, I was saying we should try to, you know, sign Anderson. I'm telling you, if we could actually get a first rounder for him right now, I'm thinking about it, but he's going to be 30 years old. He's not really going to be in our plan in 4 years. I would let him go. That's just the way I feel, Pat.
Fair enough.
If you could, even if they say this, you get rid of Anderson, we make the playoffs, okay. So we can maybe, if we have a group of a three or four first rounders, that we can maybe move up to get a top 10. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, say we have, you know, three, you know, like an 18th, a 20th, or with the Panthers, who knows, it'll be a 30th. We can give up all three of those and pick eighth. Just the same. At least you have a chance to do that.
Doesn't usually happen. Those picks are usually held on to. Here's what I would say about Anderson. I honestly, if you're going to move him, I think two things are important for me. Number one, see what a contract conversation looks like. And you can have preliminary and you have a pretty decent idea type conversations before July 1st, but you can't actually start negotiating until July 1st. So for me, I would see what the contract negotiations or at least the first contract chats look like. And then I think you've got a better chance myself, Tone, of getting the type of return you'd want for Erasmus Anderson. I think that you get a better return in the offseason myself. I really do, because you'll have way more teams involved.
I don't know, Pat, because you think he still has a year left on a great contract.
Yes,
so
he
does. You trade him this year, so the team gets him for two playoff runs almost.
Correct.
This year. So I think you would get a better haul this year. I personally think you would.
And that's fine. I think by getting more teams involved, you'd have a better chance at a better return. But I don't know that for sure.
Does he have a no? He must have some teams he can.
He's got, I believe, an 8-team no trade is what I believe it is.
This year, even if you were to trade him now?
Yes, I believe so.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't change in July.
I don't believe so. No. I believe he's got the same trade protection now as it would in the summertime.
Yeah, like I said, Pat, I really believe this next 20 games, yeah, any contenders are going to play now, it's going to be like the last three games we saw, because these contenders are going to bring it up another level.
And Tone, it's a 6-team list that he's got, and that is the same now as it is in the summertime.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess, but I mean, like, I'm hoping Connery doesn't, like I said, you've talked to him, and he's going to stay on the course. He's not going to give up any of our futures for any rentals, which is a good sign, I hope. But I mean, like I said, this is not the same vibe as 2004. Just, I don't know. I said I've been a Flame fan since the beginning. I just don't feel it's the same. We don't have a Jerome on our team. We don't have a top and forward. We don't. We have good forwards, but we don't have an all-star forward.
I agree. I mean, there's no question that that they don't have a future Hall of Famer like that in his prime. And let's also not forget that Jerome was right in the middle of his most important years at that time. Like exactly. the guy had already scored 50. Like, yeah, they don't have that. They do have,
and, you know,
they have a good, really good goalie in Wolf. You can't deny that. As a potential parallel. But they probably don't have a shutdown D like they had in Robin Regier.
The D back then was a little bit tougher, right? It was a tougher team. Like, they didn't have the talent, but they were tougher.
It was also a different brand of hockey, as you said. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But like I said, you know what? At this point, like I said, you never know what could happen. They're not going to end up. They're not going to get down to the top 10. There's no way that's happening.
But why not, Tony? Like, go take a look at how close the standings are.
I know, but they're still... Okay, the only two teams that are close to them really right now are I think, Vancouver, Utah, and St. Louis, right?
But you're talking about falling into the top 10 in terms of the draft. They are 3 points removed from being there.
3 points? Really? Okay.
23rd... So if you finish 23rd or lower, you end up you would end up with a top 10 pick and thus keep your pick, and Florida's pick would transfer to Montreal. Well, right now the Flames have 65 points. They're tied for 16th, and the Rangers have 62 points. They're tied for 23rd. That's a 3-point difference. So
I looked at the standings. I must have just calculated it wrong. But okay, well, that okay, let's see what happens. Like, you know, like, I know, I don't know. I just, it's even today's game, like the last three games, you could tell that just that they were just manhandled. They were, even today, they were manhandled.
I mean, Carolina was the better team today. There's no doubt. The Flames fought hard. I'm not going to take that away from them either.
Yeah.
But yeah, this team, look, this team is 31st overall, tied for 31st overall in terms of goal scoring. They have scored the least amount of goals in the NHL. That's not really something that you would suggest is what you hear from a what you hear about a contender, right?
No, that's right. Yeah, it's like like I'm saying, I'm hoping they can find that center. I mean, we need the more the offense. We need the that's the main course. We don't want to start, trading away our assets for some rentals and like just because we even if we made the playoffs, it's craziness. But do you think he would trade away any of these guys if say that by Friday? What do we have? Three more games by Friday? Is it
two more games now?
So if we lose both these games. Which is making it hard because Vancouver keeps losing too. So it's the chances are us making the playoffs. They're helping the Alfred, and I actually want Vancouver to win, but it's not happening that way. But I mean, do you think Conrad might trade some of these guys, or do you think he's going to stay with Kadri and with Anderson? And
I think he's made it pretty clear. He's made it pretty clear that those guys aren't really. For the rest of this season, those guys aren't in the mix to be dealt. They feel like they're really important guys in terms of setting the standard in this organization. They feel like they're really important guys in terms of helping them get from point A to point B and go from being a team that is here where they're trying to build. They're in the beginning stages of building to something and to the end goal, which is actually being a competitor. The Flames feel, Craig Conroy feels, this management group feels that the six veterans they have right now are really important in helping bring the younger players along and help. So, and not everybody agrees with that. Everybody's got their own opinion, but unless they're really out of it between now and the trade deadline, and I don't really see that happening, Tony. I don't think we're going to see this group sell off their veterans.
Yeah. I love Kadri. Like you probably get more from him in the off season anyway, but like I said, I'm hoping they pick in the top 10, Pat. So that's like 3 points. Okay, it sounds better than what I was looking. I thought they were out of it, but they have 3 points, right? Anything could happen. There's some hope for me. Okay. Okay, Pat. Thanks for taking my call, buddy.
You know it. As always, Tone, good to hear from you, pal.
Yeah, you take care.
You as well, man. 403-240-4444 as the Flames lose this one 2-1 in overtime on the road in Carolina as we say hello to Anand. What's up, Anand?
Good evening, buddy. How are you this evening?
I am okay, my friend. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I think your prediction, when I asked you right before the road trip series, I think you told me a prediction of 3-2-1. I think you got the 2-1 correct so far. Now we just need maybe to string in 2 wins. What did you see different from today's game compared to the last two so far?
I mean, not a ton. They still are struggling defensively. I thought there was a little bit more fight in their game this game than maybe against Florida. But I thought that and maybe they were a little less listless in this game than they were against the Panthers yesterday. But generally, they're still struggling mightily to score goals. They've scored one goal in 9 periods and 0 5-on-5. So, I mean, they definitely were. Their penalty kill was really good. This is still a group that's struggling to score. I thought maybe they were a little less run over in this game today than they were. Like Florida ran their show, maybe a little bit less in that side of things today.
Yeah, fair enough. My second question for you, what did you think of the Pahal and Solovyov scratch? I thought maybe they'll take out maybe if Solovyov or us, and maybe they'll put in Bean or Marimano. But do you know...
To do both?
They took out do both.
I think the main thing is just shaking things up, man. Like I think that they felt like they played so poorly against the Panthers and they hadn't scored in 2 straight games that, you know, everything's on the table and wanted to get a few new names, new faces into the lineup. So just decided to do the entire third pairing.
Yeah, gotcha. Fair enough. And final question for you. This is more, the Wranglers also, I know they have struggled a bit recently. Like they lost 7 wins in a row, then they won one and they lost yesterday too. Do you see any concern on the Wranglers front as well, like as of recently?
I mean, they're not winning as much. They definitely, they've also been, let's also not forget, they've been pretty gutted in terms of their roster. They've lost a lot of important players, right? So they definitely are not scoring as much. Offense has become a real issue for them. I think that is, that's kind of one of the main things that you're seeing right now. They haven't gotten the same level of goaltending that they were earlier. As Cooley's game has maybe dipped a little bit since the concussion and since the All-Star break, and his All-Star appearance. So those would be a few things that you're seeing from the Wranglers right now.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I think that's about it. Yeah. I hope the Flames can get some scoring come the Philadelphia Flyers game. But again, we see kind of the history where the Flames kind of maybe sometimes played low down to the teams that are below their standings. But hopefully they turn it the other way around. All right, thanks, Pat, for the chat. Appreciate it. Have a good day, and then talk to you on Tuesday against Philadelphia Flyers.
Great to hear from you as always, Anand. Be well, pal.
Yeah, have a good night. Take
it. Phone lines are open at 403-240-4444 following this Flames 2-1 overtime loss against the Carolina Hurricanes. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk post-game show. Let's head back inside the Flames locker room, get some more post-game thoughts, get some more post-game reaction. Let's hear from Flames defenseman Rasmus Anderson after this overtime setback today.
Good fight. Second and third period, I thought we were, especially second period, I thought we played really well. And then, third period was a little weird one. A lot of special teams, and managed to get one on the power play and didn't let one in on the PK. And a little frustrating overtime, and probably should have shot that. And then, getting caught out there for 3 minutes almost, and that's not a recipe for success. So, we'll take the 1 point, but... feels like we should have too.
Given the way you started, is like 1 point almost seems miraculous that you guys were able to bounce back?
I mean, not really. We obviously didn't really have any shots in the first, but, we know they're a team that shoots from everywhere. And, once we, settled in a little bit in the second, I thought we dominated the second. And then, third period, as I said, was back and forth. So, 1-1 period each, and third is back and forth, and then OT is if I shoot that, maybe it goes in, and maybe it doesn't, they score anyways, but it's a little frustrating end.
That sequence at the end with 4 minute penalty to kill off, and just the desperation from everybody that was on the ice.
Huge kill, and I think we all got a hell of a boost there from Nacho fighting, and we just wanted to kill it off, and we did. And, our PK has been looking, I think, better and better the last few games. And if we can carry that momentum towards Philly, we'll be fine.
Significance in just getting that goal, though, just given the stress that had been there. Obviously, the power play marker, but just the way that it can maybe provide some pop.
Yeah, we were joking in the dressing room before the third that, ninth period is the charm, and and we managed to get one. So, huge power play to step up there. And as I said, PK was good all night.
Ninth period's the charm. Ninth time's the charm, boys. I like that. There's Rasmus Anderson post-game after a 2-1 overtime loss to Carolina. Okay, last call for phone calls. If you're on hold, stay there. We will get to you. If you want to jump in line, call now, 403-240-4444. Keep your text coming at 960-960 as well. Flames lose this one 2-1 in overtime to the Carolina Hurricanes. 4 down, 2 to go on this 6-game road trip. Steinberg along with you on your Flames Talk post-game show, and this is Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Flames Talk post-game show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Following a Flames 2-1 overtime loss to Carolina this afternoon, as we continue on this Sunday night edition of your Flames Talk post-game show. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Last trip inside the Flames locker room. What an afternoon for Dustin Wolf as he makes 31 on 32. He was spectacular today. Let's hear from Dustin as he speaks post-game in Carolina.
No, that's our group. We stay in and we fight. Doesn't matter, what the shots are. That's our team to a T. Is we don't give up. We're never out of anything, and We just couldn't find that second one.
For those of us who have never played goaltender, I ask this seriously, how hard is it to pick up a shot like Aho's one-timer there? Do you even get a good view of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know what, I thought he was far enough out for me to get that one. And, you know, it's frustrating. You know, I was trying to do my job the best of my ability all game, and, you know, one shot beats you, and that finishes it. So it was frustrating. Tip your cap to that guy. It's a good release, but, you know, I think we should be able to figure out how to get that last point, and, you know, we're going to make sure we do that in Philly.
Can you take us inside those final 4 minutes as you're trying to scrap out that point and just what it looked like from your perspective?
Yeah, 4-minute high sticks, not the most ideal scenario the last 5 minutes, but, you know, credit to our kill, they were terrific out there, and, you know, Baller blocked one with the back of his head, so that was, you know, he's a warrior out there, and, you know, again, that sums up our team right there. It doesn't matter how you get the job done, as long as you get it done, and, you know, at some point, these tough times to score goals are going to flip, and, you know, we're going to score plenty.
There you go. That's Dustin Wolf post-game from Carolina, where the Flames fall 2-1 in overtime, and he was spectacular on this Sunday. Let's get back to the text line at 960-960. Lots still to get to on the text line today. This says, I watched the game at a pub. I'm a Flames fan and love the compete every game. For the first two periods, they had the sound off, and multiple times it looked like the play had ended, but it was just the lack of effort or lax play on a few occasions. This reads, does Backlund not do post-game interviews? He does. He did one yesterday. He was post-game after the loss in Florida. This from Dylan in Revy. Backlund's getting so much hate lately. He hasn't been himself for a while, but his PK work this game was straight wizardry. His stick was in every lane, deflecting pucks out of play, a couple big blocks and intercepts as well. If you're going to crap on people when they do badly, you got to pump them up when they're going well. Speaking of which, nice goal by Kadri, made up for his sitting on the ice complaining about a non-call that shouldn't have been a call anyways, instead of getting back into play and defending the rush that Carolina scored on. The embellishment and complaining on this guy is near Doughty level. Dylan, at least I gave him credit yesterday. I didn't think there was any embellishment as much as it was a borderline call. Could have been a trip, wasn't a clear trip in my eyes. He obviously felt it was a trip, but yeah, and that's kind of what we saw on the Kadri play that led to the Slavin goal. This reads, no rentals, focus on the future and let the young players develop. And I think that's what you're going to see. This says, just curious, it's not super relevant right now, but how much do you think it'll take to sign Anderson? I don't know. I don't know where the Anderson camp is. I do believe the Flames have a cap themselves and what they're willing to do. I don't know if the Flames are willing to go into the double digits. I doubt it. I don't even know if they're willing to go into the nines, but I don't know what the Anderson camp would be thinking in that regard. Would you do would 8x8 get it done? Probably from the Flames standpoint, would it get it done on the Anderson camp? I really am uncertain on that. This from Mike in Regina. Flames fans are hilarious. Coming into this year, we understood they were in a rebuild and had expectations of missing the playoffs and keeping the basement warm. Conroy stocked the draft cupboards and has shown he's not hesitant to make trades that he sees fit. This team is 2 years ahead of schedule, so why are we worried? Are they a playoff team? No, but if they somehow get in, then let's get behind this team and enjoy the ride. Enough of this couch coaching, and let's give Conroy and the team the time it needed. These guys work hard and have given us exciting hockey so far. And they have established, forged an identity, and that's a really important thing going forward. This reads, Pat, wanted to know your thoughts on a Zeri Frost Pospisil line. I think both Frost and Zeri could benefit from the pace and space that Pospisil provides, an updated version of Kadri and the kids. Well, and I believe that we saw them play, how much they played today? They played 8:55 together as that trio, and I thought they played fairly well. I liked Pospisil again, drew a couple penalties, so they used that line today, Frost, Zeri, and Pospisil, and I would stick with it. That's one of the lines I liked in this game against Carolina, so I would stick with it. This says, Pat, couple questions. In your honest opinion, the first line, where would they slot on an elite team? I think second on a good day and third on an ordinary day. Also, apart from Wolf, do they have any players who you'd consider elite on the current roster? Would Matt Coronado and Zeri have the potential to be crowned as such? For those criticizing Kadri, I guess they don't like a caring and fully invested player who hates to lose. One more point, if Sharangovich's contract ended up being like that of Mangiapane's, that would be a very poor signing. On the front of other elite players, I don't believe on this roster they do have anybody else elite outside of Wolf, who has played at that level for a good chunk this season. In my honest opinion, the Flames' top line of Kadri, Huberdeau, and Coronado, I think on most teams, on some teams would be a first line like the Flames, but on teams that you would consider cup contenders, I think right now would be a very good second line on a lot of those teams. That's my opinion, though. This from John, who was responding to Randy from earlier. I also listen a lot here in Mexico, whether on the deck at night or beach in the day. I believe John's also in Jalisco in Guadalajara, which is cool. This says, what else we got here from Camille? I just wanted to say that the call with Randy was amazing. I love hearing the positivity about the Flames, and it's really cool to hear about the similarities between the 04 team and this team. You said you struggle to compare anything to that year because it was a lightning in a bottle, once in a lifetime thing. But hey, lightning can strike twice, so go Flames, go! That would be pretty cool if they did end up striking lightning twice, or lightning striking twice. It just, that was such a magical spring. I just try not to compare anything to what we saw from 21 years ago. What else we got here at 960. How come we're talking scoring issues as if it's a new problem? Didn't they have a stretch earlier this year of 20-plus games without scoring more than three? It's been an issue all year long, something in Farabee and Frost were supposed to help address. It has been an issue all year long, and could Farabee and Frost, if they start to play at the level that the Flames hope they will, could they start to give it a little bit of a boost? Sure. Obviously, hasn't happened yet. Farabee's really struggled. Frost has been okay. But there's still time in that regard. But at the same time, they went more than 170 hockey minutes without scoring. That's a little extreme, even for this low-scoring Flames team. This says, what are your thoughts on Backlund? I just think they need some more glorified goal scorers. It's obvious they need more scores. I just don't know what that has to do with Backlund, who is the captain of this team and still plays the role that he's asked to play. Is their top two-way shutdown center, their most difficult matchup minutes, all that type of stuff. Backlund struggled before the break. No doubt he was battling through an injury there. And I think he's still battling through that injury, but is battling through it a little bit less. But Backlund's been very good for them this year, I think, and you know, has been good for them on this trip in the faceoff dot. He went 12-11 in the dot today. He's really bared down in that regard, and that's really taken a swing back to the positive since the break, because that was an area where I think the injury was really hampering him prior to the break, was in the faceoff dot. So, and I thought Backlund, to the point earlier from Dylan about his work on the penalty kill, he was spectacular on the penalty kill this afternoon. Great stuff on the text line today at 960-960. Appreciate it as always. Couple more phone calls before we wrap up Flames Talk postgame, available wherever you get your podcasts and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. By the way, St. Louis did lose, so as a result, the Flames will finish the day tied for a playoff spot. As it stands right now, Flames in Vancouver tied for the final wild card spot in the West. Calgary has the tiebreaker, so they will hold down that playoff spot on March 2nd into March 3rd. Calgary with 65 points through 60 games. Vancouver, 65 points through 60 games. St. Louis, 64 points through 62 games. So they're a point back with two more games played, rather. And then Utah is 2 points back with one more game played. So it has turned into a four-horse race. Calgary, Vancouver, over St. Louis, Utah, for the final wild card spot in the West. To the phone lines we go. Steve is with us. What's up, Steve?
How's it going, Pat?
Good, man. How are you?
Really good. I'm just driving around here with my 8-year-old son and loving the chat. Longtime listener. And I just have a couple quick questions. One is going back to the summer. I listen all the time, different podcasts, and I was listening to Warner and Boomer. And I remember at one point Rhett just raging, freaking out about how if you don't want to wear the flaming C on the front, get out of the room. Mm-hmm. And he was just sick and tired of people, you know, coming and going. And I just remember him raging. And that really stuck with me because I totally agree, obviously. But then I hear the Kadri interview in the summer, how he tells the boys to kind of park it when they're interviewing him. And he says, you know what, let's just see where we are. And it just seems that there's a true belief in this team, and that identity that Warner was talking about, and that love of, you know, being a Flame is coming around. And I feel like the youth that we've got coming in, or at least the excitement of the youth coming in. So my question to you is, you're around the team a lot. Do you see that kind of change? Like, can you feel it? Do you see it?
In terms of like guys wanting to be here?
Yeah. There's a vibe of like, this is our squad. Like,
yeah, 100%. And I felt it from the very first day of training camp. Absolutely. It's something that has been, I think, a big driving force for, you know, them kind of proving doubters wrong so far this year is exactly that. And I think that, all these guys who were still here, after the summer, Kadri, Uyghur, so on and so forth, all these names that didn't get traded last year and who entered the season still as members of the team, a lot of them kind of committed, said, hey, we're here. We're here to help this team win games, and we're here to help this team get back to being a competitor again and get back to being a playoff team. And so Kadri, Uyghur, Huberto, all those guys, and they really, if they did have a mindset where maybe they felt like, hey, I'd like to be on a playoff team, I think that there were some definite realizations that maybe that wasn't going to happen. And so a lot of those guys were like, hey, let's just buckle up and commit to this group. And I think it's a big reason why they got off to the start they got off to. And it's a big reason why that belief remains as high as it does. And then, you know, a guy like Lomberg, who wins a Stanley Cup and then decides to sign in Calgary, I don't think that hurt. And a few other factors.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what excites me, because I've been kind of bouncing between the draft pick thing and, you know, rebuild. But then you get Wolf going, and he's cooking. And then, yeah, just with that belief and you know, Huberto turning it around and really working his tail off to kind of get back to where, you know, he's putting the puck in the net and there's some excitement. It's just, it's fun to watch. And I didn't think I'd be as excited, but I also remember Francis saying at one point early in the year, you know, I don't know what the team's going to be, but I know they're going to be worth watching. Like, they're going to be a talking point. And I'm just excited. I mean, like you just said a few moments ago about St. Louis losing, like, we're right there. We got Wolfie, and who knows what's going to happen at this deadline. I mean, I doubt we're getting a Rantanen in, but man, oh man, Cousins, something like that would be super cool. And even if we just kind of stay with this team, I'm excited. So my second question is the doozy, though. It comes from my son, Jackson.
Okay.
Like I said, he's 8, he's pumped, and he said, hey, Dad, call in, I want to know who Pat thinks is going to win the cup and why.
Oof.
That one's for Jackson.
Okay, Jackson, let's think here. I mean, I think, to me, the team that I believe is the most complete team, especially knowing that they're almost certainly going to add at the trade deadline, my pick would be the Vegas Golden Knights. That's who I believe is the team that has the best chance of winning this thing. So I'll go Vegas as my cup winner. And I think Florida is going to be right there. I really do. I think the Panthers,
right, yeah,
they're going to get Tkachuk back. And so I think the Panthers will be a force to be reckoned with come the playoffs again. I really do. So those would be, that's kind of my feel is maybe a Florida Vegas cup final.
There it is. Awesome. Thank you. Say thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jackson. Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
All right,
hey,
Pat, have a great night, my man.
Thanks for calling.
Take care.
And let's wrap it up on the phone lines by saying hello to Jesse. Jesse, you're wrapping us up on the phone lines this afternoon, this evening. What's up, Jess?
Well, Pat, nice to meet you finally. Calling in from Sylvan Lake here. And I had my 2 cents to give here on draft picks.
Sure.
Lots of talk going on it. So if you'll hear me out, I'm going to take you down memory lane a little bit.
Okay.
I think I hear a lot of people chatting about draft picks, like it's a golden ticket to the Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Like, ooh, a top 10 pick is going to net you the next superstar. And I think what we're all kind of forgetting here is superstars only come around every once in a while. Like, McDavid was 2015. I mean, last year we get Macklin Celebrini, year before Bedard. Who was the year before that? Was it Lafreniere? Not quite sure. I'm going to out myself here. I actually was born in Ottawa, raised in Ottawa, and I went through the pain of Alexander Daigle in 1993. First overall draft pick.
Yes.
Second was Chris Pronger.
Yes.
So Alexander Daigle, no longer in the NHL. I believe he's actually film producing now, but he ended up out of the league at 25.
Yes.
Picked first. I feel like if you look down hockey's memory lane, there's quite a few Alexander Daigles that are just lost to the sands and time of history. So what I'm trying to say with that is a first overall pick and even a top 10 pick isn't always the be all to end all. And if we look at our amazing Calgary Flames, and as an aside, I absolutely love the team this year and the energy. It's, as a fan, it's just pumped me up. I just want to say go Flames, go. And honestly, I actually went skiing this weekend. I saw a guy wearing a Niedermeyer jersey, and I was like, go Flames, go. And he said, go Flames, go, back on the hill. Like,
a Rob Niedermeyer jersey. That is a deep Rob cut.
I know, but a fanatic's Rob Niedermeyer jersey. The gentleman customized that one, clearly. But really, you don't always get a McDavid or a Crosby. And if you look at the 2015 draft, where Crosby was drafted, do you know where Sebastian Aho was drafted?
You mean the McDavid
second
draft?
Round.
You mean the McDavid draft, not the Crosby draft.
Sorry, I'm getting mixed up.
Yeah, sorry, I just want to clarify
McDavid
that.
McDavid is drafted first. Sebastian Aho is actually a second-round pick.
Yes.
So maybe this whole talk of a first-round draft pick isn't all it's made up to be, when sometimes you find gold and as the 104th pick. Shout out to Johnny Hockey and rest his soul. But sometimes there is gold at the end of the rainbow.
There is, but at the same time, and I don't think you can argue this. Like, nobody is suggesting that getting a first overall pick is a guarantee. It's taken the Oilers however long to get to a Stanley Cup final with McDavid, and you know, Buffalo's had a absolute boatload of first overall picks, and they haven't made the playoffs since, you know, I was like in my early 20s. So you're right. There are no guarantees getting a first overall pick or a first round pick or a top five pick or whatever you want to say. However, you also can't deny that your probability of getting a transformational player is significantly higher when you get a top pick. Like, it is. And the vast majority of the transformational players all come as high top 2, 3, 4. Like, the numbers don't lie, but also what you're saying isn't false. I guess both things can be true at the same time.
So to add to your point, and let's just use the 2015 draft as a reference point, 23rd overall was Brock Besser. Doesn't need to be a high pick. Could be at the end of that first round. And that's kind of more of a player development thing. Obviously, there's a lot of variables that are going to rely on that player's success going forward. I feel like we can't really sell the farm on a variable for a draft pick that we're not quite sure. Because the way that I'm thinking is that there's 5 Connor McDavids coming down the pipes. Maybe 2 of them are going to make it to the NHL level. And they're all probably about 12 to 13 years old right now. So there's a lot to say. What do you think of that?
I hear what you're saying, and I don't even fully disagree that, like, it is true that you're guaranteed nothing with a high pick. It is also true that you've got a significantly better chance of finding the transformational franchise player with a high pick. Both things are true. And so what the Flames are doing is probably not going to get them a high pick. And so it makes it a little harder for them to find their guys, their number one center specifically, but doesn't mean that it's impossible that they're going to find that guy. You know, other examples from David Pastrnak to others that have been drafted later on in rounds. I mean, there's lots of guys that have. So nobody's saying that you're 100% incorrect. It's just at the same time, the people who want the team to get a higher pick understand that there's a higher chance of getting that pick or getting that player with a high pick.
For sure. And I absolutely hear you on that one, especially when you're talking about it. It's almost like trading chips or casino chips, right? It's worth more to have that higher pick. And I totally agree with that, and I understand it. To finish off my point here, I will say in the Alexander Dagg saga, he ended up being traded to the Philadelphia Flyers in 1995 for Vaclav Krasbal, who had 765 points. He actually ended up with decent points. So they traded the first overall for a third and drafted number 76 overall by the Chicago Blackhawks in 1993, Ryan Huska. Shout out. Gotta love it.
Absolutely. That's good. That's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, there you go. So there's your hockey history memory lane, and I appreciate the time you give me tonight. Have a great night, Pat. Great chatting with you.
You too, Jesse. Be well, pal.
Cheers.
And that will wrap us up on the phone lines today. Thank you very much for all of your phone calls. Great stuff on the text line as well. Thank you for all your texts on this afternoon and on this evening. I guess this is now into the evening on a Sunday night. Time now for our final summary in this one as the Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Carolina Hurricanes. No scoring in the first period, and the first goal of this game doesn't come until late into the second period. 39 minutes and 25 seconds into this game, Carolina opens the scoring. Jacob Slavin picks up his sixth of the year to make it 1-0 at 19:25 of the second. Jackson Blake the only assist, and it was 1-0 Carolina after 20 minutes of play. To the third period we go, where the Flames had now gone 8 consecutive periods without scoring a goal. They had a goalless drought up over 160 minutes. And finally, they snapped that drought at 171 minutes and 34 seconds as Nazem Kadri ties the game at 7:06 of the third period on the power play. 171-34 is the goalless drought, and the Flames finally score. Kadri's 21st from Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar at 7:06. We had a 1-1 tie in the third period. This game did indeed make it to overtime. We're at 3:16 of the extra frame. Sebastian Aho wins it for Carolina. His 23rd of the year from Slavin and Blake at 3:16. That gets us to our 2-1 final score. Final shots were 32-16 in favor of Carolina. Flames go 1-for-4 on the power play this afternoon. Carolina 0-for-6 with the man advantage. Your three stars in the building today. Pyotr Kochetkov in net for Carolina, number 3. Jacob Slavin, number 2. And with the overtime winner, Sebastian Aho was the number 1 star. Hardest working Flame is selected by Megan Mickelson today was Dustin Wolf with a spectacular effort between the pipes. With the overtime loss, Flames fall to 28-23-9. Back in action Tuesday on the road in Philadelphia. Carolina improves to 35-22-4. They're back in action Tuesday on the road in Detroit. That's your final summary. And now for everyone involved in Flames hockey today, for our broadcast crew of Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson, for our co-host Maddie Rose, and for our outstanding producer Azam Ali Nanji, my name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up on our Flames Talk post-game show today on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next up for the Flames, as we mentioned, is Tuesday night. They'll take on the Philadelphia Flyers. It's a 5:00 face-off, which means we're on the air at 4:00 with your Calgary Flames warm-up. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your Sunday if you're listening live, and have yourself a great week ahead. Final score from Carolina. Flames fall 2-1 in overtime to the Hurricanes. This has been your Flames Talk post-game show, available wherever you get your podcasts, and this has been Calgary Flames Hockey on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.